Let's get it funky. Pull up your socks.
All Day Socks by Underworks pass every test. Pick up a pair and test them for yourself.
Well, there's plenty of them got to pull up their socks, but the Bombers yesterday at Marvel Stadium, there's a number of aspects of this which is concerning if you're an Essendon fan, and that is 20,000 people, first of all. The apathy of the group by the end of it. Port Adelaide were great and they were clinical in the way they dismantled this side, but this has got... I don't know what may or may not happen on the back of that performance yesterday, but I wouldn't be surprised if there are serious questions being asked about around Essendon on the back of the year, on the back of the number of times the coaches have come out after it and saying, it's embarrassing and we won't stand for it or we won't tolerate it. Well, it is being tolerated because it keeps happening. And a big club like that with 20,000 people with probably 10,000 left by the end of it, and the 10,000 that were left, from what I could gather, were booing at various stages. That is not a club that is in good shape.
Well, the club that knocked them over lost their first five and had a bad start similarly to Essendon, and they lost their last four games before this game yesterday. So it's support have been competitive, but they haven't been world beaters.
No.
And Essendon have been in a very similar situation. They're not able to play finals, but they were trying to play for and show some spirit. And they had probably a block of 6 weeks of form. But no, that was a very disappointing performance. And you described it as apathy. And that's probably where the club looks like it's at the moment, on and off the field.
If we weren't about to embrace a great final round of footy and then turn our minds to finals, which we'll do, then this would be... Yeah, if this happened 5 weeks, this would be the biggest story today, Essendon. The Essendon Football Club would be the biggest story. And the coach and his future and what they're going to tolerate and what the board will stand for in terms of this is a big power club and what is happening there will be deemed to be unacceptable. So what happened yesterday post that game would be a fascinating study because I would imagine that there are people at Essendon that just aren't and won't accept what's going on at that footy club. Let's have a listen to Ben Rutten post-game.
Bitterly disappointed. It was the sort of game that our supporters, our members that came to the game tonight, watching on TV, it's not the sort of thing they should have to watch. It was an embarrassing effort and output from our guys. And as I said, it's not something that we certainly want to stand for, not something our members and supporters should have to watch at any stage.
I don't know anything in this space, but that performance has got... a whiff about uncertainty and fog descending on a footy club, and it's a standby and watch what unfolds in the next however long.
So you're suggesting that the uncertainty and fog comes after the fact?
No.
Or that it causes
the... Well, this has been here for long enough.
Yeah.
And there's some... I likened it to the... When all's lost, then Essendon start to come, and they win games. Nothing wins. It's been a really... What do they stand for as a footy club right now? How do they play? We can all go to our tapes and show vision and all that sort of stuff, and there's been no great improvement. And then 2 weeks out from a season, you wander out to Marvel Stadium against a team that aren't – this is not a team who are sitting in the top four, the Port Adelaide Footy Club, and they've put them to the sword by 84 points and rendered them, useless by the end of the game. So, for me, that's just when however many years we've been doing this in the media, you get a bit of a sense when things start to just rumble along a little bit, and so you might be a watch this space.
It's not a small margin, and you get those big discrepancies in games, and the differences are quite marginal in today's football. But at the same time, you can be well beaten and be beaten by 5 goals. Like that, we're talking about a margin nearly 3 times that. So it doesn't happen as often, and if it does happen, it generally points to a white flag going up and to a lack of capacity to actually stay the course and compete for the full 4 quarters.
And it gets sheeted back to the coach, which is right or wrong. And then when he comes out and says we can't accept or tolerate it, and we won't, it sounds really hollow. When you say that after, with one game to go, we can't accept it or tolerate it. Well, it kind of has been accepted and tolerated, and that is why you see this non-existent defensive want, pressure, desire, want to work to one another. That's why it just unfolds, and an 84-point margin materialises.
I look at on-field leadership as well, because yes, it does get slated back to the senior coach quite often, but there are a lot of leadership positions around the place.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. It's not just the coach, but he's the one that's going to come under. They all will come under pressure.
Correct. But then you look at the senior leadership within the playing group, and I don't think Essendon have been really established. They copped a little bit of flack in the middle of the year, like, you know, Dyson Heppel's comments, Andy McGrath's comments, saying that the leaders needed to step up. And, you know, remember that after one of their better performances, he stood up and said, look, we need to step up here. We just haven't been good enough. So
and Dyson came on the he was passionate, you know, he was on the couch and passionate, all those sorts of things. But the bottom line is nothing's changed. Nothing changes. So then you have this spurt against teams where no one's really paying much attention to you because it's inconsequential. And then bang, you get this result yesterday, which I don't think can be tolerated. And I'm not sure that people at Essendon are going to tolerate it. So let's just watch and see.
If you're not playing finals, the last 2, 3, 4 weeks are really important on how you finish the season, because it invariably tells you how you're going to start your next. Now, Essendon finished strong last year, you know, but they had a draw from hell at the beginning of the year, but they've had a chance to reconcile and to pick that up. It just hasn't happened.
It's a big watch. Just
kidding. The buck stops here for TC Boxes, the home of trays, canopies, toolboxes and dog boxes for the back of your ute.
Welcome, everyone. Great to have you with us. It is a Monday before the final round of the AFL season, which kicks off on Friday night. Huge ramifications almost in every game. But it also marks a week or the start of what is the most dramatic news week. So stay with us this morning. There's a bit going on right now. There's a bit bubbling around in the world of footy, and might be concerning the Giants announcement. It might be concerning the North Melbourne Footy Club announcement. How have the Essendon hierarchy and heavy hitters accepted the pathetic performance that unfolded yesterday? All of that is in the melting, in the bowl, in the mix, and it's all churning right now, and there's a bit going on. So Sam Edmund's going to join us out at 7:30. I'd suggest you don't go anywhere. Bucks, but over to you. The buck stops.
Well, with that backdrop, I'm going the other way to start this off. At the end of round 22, we're a week away from the finals, and winning and losing seems to be the most important thing. It means a little less to me. The number one story, I think, out of the weekend was Ben Cunnington and his return after two bouts of cancer for North Melbourne.
Especially where we've come from, and Belinda's been right there from the start. We had three little kids. We just had a newborn, and then about a week later, I started chemo. So she's been a rock, been there every bit of it. So I honestly couldn't have got back without her. And then she's cried about two or three times in our whole life. And to see her in tears, it wasn't the best prep, but it was good just to take it all in and appreciate where we've been.
Got a club that's won two games for the year, lost their coach, has nothing to play for, but, you know, a universally respected player in Ben Cunnington and a person. To see the human side that exists underneath this game that, is a professional game and we all love, but just that story alone, I think was brilliant for the club. It was brilliant to see that Ben's up and about and has a chance to play the game that he loves. And I just thought it was really well handled by the North Melbourne Footy Club and Ben himself. So all credit.
Great story. And there's many of them throughout the course of this year, and it sits at the very pointy end, and it was great to see. I concur entirely.
Now, number two is a similar story. It's a maligned player in Jake Melksham who, halfway through the year, he skirmished with Stephen May, and the words that were exchanged were seen as, as nearly something that wasn't going to be overcome. But his performance on the weekend was first class.
He's a bit of a maligned player, but he's worked incredibly hard. And his last month of footy for us, I think he's embodied a lot about our group. He's played on some good players in the last month. You know, Darcy Moore, Lear, you know, Wiedering, and then McGovern. And then to impact the scoreboard, he's worked so hard to be a part of this team. And he's getting what he deserves in the game.
So he came out of the wreckage of Essendon with the drugs scandal and moved clubs and has come to Melbourne. And whether the words were, you know, we wouldn't have won the flag if you'd have played, whether it's anything like that, you know, that sticks to a player. But he seems to be a really tough kid. His contested mark with a minute and a half to play gave Melbourne a chance. 15 disposals, Seven marks, four goals, two. Playing as a defensive forward, looks after the intercept marker or the leading intercept marker of the opposition, and he's established himself. He's going to be in the run home. If Melbourne, wherever Melbourne go, he's going to be because he's played an important role recently.
Yeah, and two of the players, I thought that two of the more important ones that got him across the line were two players that didn't play in that grand final. Melksham, one of them, and Jaden Hunt was the other, who was just so important at various stages. It's interesting, isn't it? At the time Mark Robinson wrote about Melbourne and the Melksham dust-up, he said that their season's falling apart. Make no mistake, trouble is sitting amongst this mob. That's a direct quote. In his article today, the Couch psychologist mused that the Stephen May Melksham punch on at Pran restaurant would tear Melbourne apart. Well, that was you.
Is that what he's calling himself now, the Couch psychologist?
Well, that was you that wrote it.
All right, mate. Well done. Little nice little drive-by and a whack. I like it. Number three, I've got Tom Lynch. Eight goals at the G yesterday at three-quarter time. He's kicked 55 for the year. This guy could well be the joker in the pack for Richmond going to the finals.
You've got to remember, it's the first full pre-season he's had since he's been at our footy club. Like, he's played off basically zero prep the other seasons we've had him. And, you know, it's really significant that he does get the work in, comes in, and you just see how big and strong he looks in the contest today. What I was really, really pleased with was, you know, Jack realised who the hot hand was and got the hell out of his way.
Taking clunks and pack marks is pivotal in finals football and in big games. And if they've been taken in the forward 50, which is where he's spending the majority of his time, he's not roaming far and wide like he did at the Suns when he was first cutting his teeth as a key forward, but he's still a very mobile player, still very agile, can get the ball on the ground. But you take three or four clunks in a forward 50 in a big game, in a tight game, final in the MCG, that's going to make a difference. And I think he's cherry ripe to have a big
September.
Yeah,
he was enormous yesterday. And his kicking is the other thing which tells you his confidence. Like, he flushed everything. He was kicking from outside 50. So the Tigers, they've got Cumberland, who's a player. Rioli Jr., who we can talk about a little later, who's having his best moments at the moment. Jack Riewoldt, of course. Bolton into the mix, Lynch, and then you got the guy in number four sitting back. Whew, if he gets back in that first week, look out.
Well, and there's some wait-and-see stories on that, isn't there? Because personnel, as much as injuries, becomes a big factor. All right, I've got a couple of moments to finish with. Number four, Dane Rampey's goal in the first quarter was amazing, but his roll-back defensive effort to stop Brody Mychek kicking a goal in the middle of the last quarter was a significant moment.
Have a listen to the Sydney crowd, who love that defensive effort that epitomises what this footy club is all about.
Well, I think there was, and when you get great games and great contests like that, and that's what we hope to see next week in round 23 with a couple of these games and then into finals, it is key moments that make the difference. And Rampy's effort
that
there.
That was spine tingling.
Well, we've seen Collingwood get that trade. They force the opposition to trade up, and you get the plus one over the top skinny side, and they end up getting over the back. And that's happened quite often with this aggressive ball use. But Rampy didn't give up, and that was a 60-metre rollback chase.
Oh, geez,
and it was nearly done. But
crowd was going nuts.
Sydney just were able to best their direct opposition in Collingwood in enough of those big moments. And it's still a tight contest. You know, they controlled it for the most part, but it was still a tight contest, and it was brilliant to watch. But Dane Rampy, as one of the captains of the club, stood up. And the last one for me was right at the end of the Saturday night game. Melbourne were able to, as you said, Jaden Hunt took that ground ball and was able to kick it in long. But to get the ball in the first place, it was squared up by Jake Lever. It was a great heads-up play to put the ball in the dangerous position.
Carlton fans, they can feel September. It's not far away now. Gawn bangs this one forward. Carlton just needs some slow play here. Melbourne might roll the dice one more time. Lever on the boot.
Not a bad
inside
kick.
The centre of the MCG. Can Melbourne mount one more attack? They can!
I reckon Vossi...
Talk us through that. What happened there?
Well, Vossi will be looking at Carlton. Did they get enough numbers back behind the ball? Because when that ball went in, it was actually even numbers. And you can't have that when you're defending a less than one goal lead with seconds remaining. But Jake Lever was able to get his hand on the ball. He just... that you always think, all right, okay, well, let's get directly to goal. Let's get as close to goal as we can. That's probably the instinct, but that is where the opposition numbers will be.
And you get trapped into a corner, into that dead pocket, and it stays there.
And we often see, well, that's why your best scoring opportunity sometimes is when you go back out and around, draw the defence up, and then maybe go in. But what that kick was just a blind 90-degree perpendicular kick into the middle of the field. Motlop was the only Carlton player against three Melbourne players. Hunt swooped on it and was able to get it down for Kaziah to finish off. But a great heads-up play by an experienced player. Would have been coached, but you still got to keep your head in the moment to trust and to execute when it matters.
We'll talk about that with Jake Lever when he joins us, as does Liam Baker. So Ben Cunnington, Jake Melksham, Lynch, the Dane Rampy bump on my check, and having a... keeping your composure in at the most important time. Matt from Frankston, who's rung in. G'day, Matt.
Good morning, boys. I just want to talk about the game on Saturday. I think Chris Judd's probably the best centre clearance player, and I'm not drawing comparisons, but Luke David Uniacke's second quarter was as close to Judd S as I've seen. He read the tap of the Ruckman's ball drop perfectly. He shrugged people off with his hips. He just pinned his shoulders back, and it was amazing to watch as a North fan. It was like, well, we finally found our A-grader.
Something to look forward to, Matty, for sure. And whoever takes over, whether that announcement comes this week, if it is Alistair Clarkson, as many are speculating, then I'm sure Luke Davies Uniacke would be someone right there in the frame for him when he looks at building a side around them. I've got a couple to add. The Tagger, I keep talking about it. Yep. You and I have agreed and disagreed at various stages. Windhager to Neil on Friday night worked. Lockie Neil's so important to that football club, and he has shown, I think, that he can be tagged. Clark to Nick Dacos, was it? Being told this, but Clark to Nick Dacos worked yesterday.
There's definitely attention.
Matheson to Steele. Now, Jack Steele and the Saints aren't really in the finals window. They've got a slim chance, but it has been lost a little bit. So Matheson this week, does he go to Oliver? Does he go to Petrarca in that? Taggers coming into finals are back in vogue.
It is, and it often happens. Gaz, we often see it when the game... So you back yourself and you back your system and you back your structure and you're nearly prepared to play and to develop your game style, you know, without this tagging, this idea of, you know, hard tagging. But when the game's there to be won and when you absolutely need to shut down an opposition player, when you get to the pointy end, you need to have it in your armory. And most clubs do. Very few don't have that option to go to. Like Melbourne have Harms. And obviously Chris Fagan has used it with Matheson or with Berry in the past. And if you can get a C grader to do a job on an A grader and it helps you win the game, well, then that's something that you've got to consider.
And, you know, I think Nick Dacos will win the Rising Star, one of the most outstanding seasons. We've been so nice to him because we haven't put, and this is a credit to Nick, this is not a knock on Nick. We've let him go. Can't happen in big finals. And that's why Chris Fagan had this to say post-game about Lockie Neal.
It was interesting how he was tagged. I'll just say that. It was interesting how he was tagged, that, you know, that he was blocked off the ball and various other things during the night. But I guess that's the way it goes. He gets pretty rough treatment, I reckon. I mean, I know it happens a lot, but players shouldn't get blocked from getting to the ball like he does.
Because they don't like it, the coaches. And what Fags are saying is just out of your book, your rule, not yours personally, but the coach's rule book. Oh. Put it on the agenda. Let someone else. You know, he might get tagged again, but at least we've raised it. They don't want. Their main men tagged.
No, they don't.
It doesn't work for them.
No, they don't. And whether that comment was coming about me, I was tagged as a player, or whether you're saying it about
you were tagged from game one, virtually.
Yes, there was a lot of tagging around, and it was an era that I would have loved to have played in, this one where you shake hands at the start. Although I played there for a little while, but no, the tagging was in vogue in the middle of my career, but. It definitely has an impact, and we see it when it does, and we think that that's the panacea, but it needs to be effective. You need to have someone who has the attributes to be able to tag firstly, And then secondly, you need to know that it's actually going to work. We had times when we chose not to tag because we didn't think it was going to be effective.
Yeah.
Because we didn't think we had the player who could do it to the capacity that would actually make it worthwhile.
And there, and this is being pointed out, and I've spoke about this yesterday a lot. McGuinness went to Shea Bolton yesterday, and it worked. So, and this is a great thing for Richmond. They still won by 60 points, and Shea Bolton had had moments, but a negligible impact compared to the sort of form that he's been in. So whoever plays Richmond in game one of the finals will look at that and go, okay, can we go to him?
So are we seeing the next wave of Cameron Lings, of Anthony Stevens? Duncan Kelleher is probably a little bit more of a lockdown. Tony Free did it for a little while. Todd Viney, tagged and won the ball himself. Are we seeing this, the next evolution of tagging players who actually are ball getters as well?
I hope so.
Windhager's, his performance was...
He got more footy than Neil.
He had 21 touches and Neil had 16.
Yeah. So why it... Anyway, it's one that has continually surprised people that it hasn't been in vogue when you can see the impact that it has on the opposition team. Great to have you with us. Loving the messages. I don't know what you're on, Panassi, but anyway. I tell you, right now, the Field Marshal has wandered in Sam Edmund and a week out from the final game. There's always things happening. Players are retiring. Appointments need to be made.
You guys.
No one is better placed to talk about this than the Field, and that Essendon performance may also.
Come on, Gary.
Come on, you go.
Good morning to
it's
you.
It's your show now.
No, it's not. Stop doing that.
Over to you.
Good morning to you, Bucks. I hope you're well.
Good
as
morning,
well.
Good morning, Sammy. How are you?
Great to see you both. Well, coaching announcements not too far away at two clubs, GWS and North Melbourne, Gary. And renewed pressure, I think it's fair to say, on a third club to make its own change, and that being Essendon. There's a lot of anger around the Bombers at the moment. So if the patience is wearing thin on where they stood, for many connected to that club, that level of patience has evaporated. So plenty of rumblings last night. We know there will be change brought on by the football department review. They're second in 3 years. That was announced in May by the president, Paul Brasher. How far those changes extend is the question some connected to the club were asking, pondering last night. So just have a listen to Ben Rutten as well. This was him last night. He was asked specifically after the loss to Port Adelaide whether his belief was wavering in the direction the club was headed in.
Does it shake your belief in where you're going at all?
Oh, look, not in my belief in where we're going. I mean, it's certainly, it's not a great result in terms of tonight's performance. There's no question about that. You know, but it's about us being really strong and really clear as a footy club and as a group of players about where we're going and what we're trying to build. Yeah, it's never going to be a smooth sailing, clean progression to becoming a great team. But the performances like that is not stuff that we can tolerate or accept, and we won't. And it really hurts.
Now, they are a club, they're a powerful club. So when things are going well, they're going very well. When things are going like they are at the moment, there's always going to be rumblings. They're a big coterie club as well, with outspoken partners and supporters and members. So at the moment, Gary, there's a lot of anger around the club. They're a watch for today and for this week, I think it's fair to say. Without putting the cart before the horse, I think they are a watching brief at the moment.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting day, but we'll move on.
Do you reckon there's anything that the coach can say in that circumstance that actually has you go, yeah, that sounds like he's got it all under control? Because, I mean, you're coming from a position of weakness, aren't you? When a performance as poor as that off a season as poor as this, there's nowhere to go, is there?
And you keep saying you can't tolerate it, and you won't tolerate it, but the performances keep coming. It puts you under more pressure.
Yeah.
At North Melbourne, it'll be announced very soon, maybe this week even, that major sponsor Mazda has signed on again. So that's a significant announcement, and it's been widely speculated that that will act as the trigger for a range of off-field movement, potentially a coaching announcement and a CEO announcement as well. So just with the CEO, look, record membership, no debt, new facility, Mazda back on board, commercially been a massive success, but there's a concern there that they won't be able to attract the football staff they need unless there's a CEO change and a more football-orientated CEO is brought in. So they're a watch as well, North Melbourne, of course.
Is that a proviso of the if it's Clarkson, for instance, that he would want a different CEO? Is that where we're heading?
I couldn't say as absolute fact that that's come back to North Melbourne in terms of feedback, but there's an awareness at North Melbourne that they won't be able to recruit, and not just the senior coach, but that top-level football IQ unless there's other changes made to their current setup at Arden Street.
How does that come about? Because obviously if Clarkson's coming in as coach, he's not going to be looking at the admin, or has he looked at the admin?
Oh, I think it's part of the consideration. Yep, for sure.
And Jeff Walsh wouldn't have looked at that, though. He's looking at, like, director of footy down.
No, I think there's feedback. I think there's feedback in that part of the club as well from the Jeff Walsh review, which we're still waiting on a summary of findings, which, of course, you can understand can't be put out until those staff members are informed, which they hadn't been as of late last week, and also a new coach is appointed, which all makes sense. GWS, they've been determined to run a process. So as of Saturday, they had not made any offer to Alistair Clarkson. So it's hard for him to accept a job at GWS that he hasn't been offered.
They might have offered it to someone else.
Well, Adam Muse, Adam Kingsley, Mark McVay, all interviewed along with Clarkson. So while North obviously go chips in, they make that offer to Alistair Clarkson. He's been North Melbourne's one and only option at this stage. The Giants have been stepping through it a bit differently. Now, from what I've heard, I think Adam Muse in the absolute box seat to take over there. Now, watch this space. But I think Adam Muse, if you were to frame a market right now, you'd have him at the top of the tree.
Is it conceivable that Adam Uze, or whomever, has won that job in his own right?
That's what some are saying at the moment, Gary, but I could not state that as fact at the moment.
The consensus
that has actually taken place.
Yeah, so North Melbourne are all in on Clarko, but the Giants are saying, he is one of whoever, and if it's emerged that he's presented and Clarkson's presented, and then he wins out in his own right.
Well, what we know of coaching is that one coach is not necessarily a fit for all. And we all think that Alistair Clarkson is going to be the best fit for any club because of his record and because of his career to date. But that's not necessarily the case. Every club needs to work out exactly what its setup is, what it's looking for, what personality it wants to have. And that will determine the individual that it needs to bring in. So I think that shouldn't be read that Alistair Clarkson is the best fit for every
but it's still,
opportunity.
That's true, Nathan. That is true. But it would be a big story if they've gone through a considered process and elected to go for a first year coach over a full-time.
Absolutely, absolutely, it would be a big story.
And these things are so tightly held. We piece together things from what we're told and what we hear along the way. So we'll wait and see. I think it's going to come to a head at both those clubs shortly. Speaking of things coming to a head, this Thursday there's a CEO's conference for the AFL. A lot to get through. A lot on the agenda. One thing the clubs believe will be discussed, Gary, is an increase to the salary cap. So we talk a lot about the soft cap, marginal increase next year and beyond. But the TPP at each club at the moment is set. It's back to the top, $13.5 million this year, excluding those additional services agreements. So the clubs I spoke to say they've been given an indication that the cap is about to rise somewhere in the vicinity of 5%. So that takes it up another $600,000, $650,000. So effectively another good player is able to be paid. So it all hinges on the broadcast rights deal, of course, which hasn't even been confirmed, and the revenue share model as well attached to that going forward as part of the new collective bargaining agreement. But as far as the clubs are concerned, the ones I spoke to, they think they're going to get a little bump up when it comes to the salary cap next year. They'll watch this space as well.
I'm just watching the final hole of the FedEx and Jude Championships. Al Torres has sunk a 10-foot putt for par, so he's at 15 under. Straka's got a hole to play. He's also at 15 under, so he's in a tie for the win right now with Straka with one hole to play. Sorry, Phil.
That was very nice by Coxie. I don't know if you heard that. Beautiful.
Yeah, a little ball drop.
Yeah, that was very nice. Understated. We need to talk about Zane Cordy. So Groundhog Day with the bump, about to go on trial again. We've got a puzzling situation involving Zane Cordy, who's been sent straight to the tribunal for a shepherd on Tanner Bruin at GWS, left the youngster concussed. Cordy was blocking within the permitted 5 metres for teammate Ed Richards. But there's some nasty whiplash for Tanner Bruin at play there, and his head hits the ground hard and he's concussed. I'm just not sure why it hasn't been graded by Michael Christian. I mean, 22 charges laid from the Saturday games. Why wasn't this one graded?
Gun shy.
Or you clear him right then and there. Well, almost like it's in the too hard basket. Something's gone on behind the scenes there that has seen him send this directly to the tribunal ungraded.
Do you think the AFL have suggested that is the best way to go?
I don't know, Gary. Nah. I don't know. I just...
Looking at it, what do you think it... How would you grade it?
I've got some sympathy for Zane Cordy because he's trying to block for a teammate.
Yep.
And he's got the shoulder tucked in.
Yep.
And it's within the 5 metres.
Yep.
But at the end of the day, he's bumped. He's caused harm to another
but
player.
But not classified as high contact. It can't be classified as high contact.
But are you not culpable if you choose to bump and the other player gets concussed, whether it be by whiplash or your head slams the ground or whatever it is? So let the player argue the defence. Let the Dogs argue the defence. And if they get off, they get off. But at least put it to them. This hot potato, just passing it down the line.
As I said yesterday, it's just a farce, the whole thing.
If you're going to take the job that Chris O's taken, you need to sort of make a decision on that. But At the same time, I can understand how you want to hand that on. Just because I'd nearly been able to go, I don't know how I can possibly give this guy a week for executing a perfect bump within reason. Our contact should have been expected, but because of something that's happened after the contact,
so hang on,
he's supposed to get a week.
So he might get a week for not hitting the head, whereas Cripps gets no weeks for hitting the head. Tell me the system's in good shape.
So I can understand him handing it on, but at the same time, if you're in the role, he's confused, or if he's asking for clarity from the tribunal, well then maybe.
So these decisions get ticked off by the AFL. We know that. So we wonder what the conversation was like yesterday behind closed doors with it. You know, was it one where, who knows, maybe Michael Christian's decided he should get off. Now AFL said, no, we can't have something like that get off, or vice versa. And he's just said, well, stuff it. I'll send it to the
tribunal. So you reckon there's a negotiation before these things come down?
Well, yeah, there is sometimes. Yeah, absolutely. They're discussed. They're discussed internally, no doubt, with the AFL. Mm. Antonio Conte, Thomas Tuchel, I know you spoke about it earlier, guys. The Spurs and Chelsea managers clashed at the end of a dramatic 2-2 draw in the Premier League at Stamford Bridge. Now, watch the highlights. This have been brewing for the 90 minutes because they kept celebrating their team's goals in front of each other. They would run across in front of each other and celebrate.
Up your nose.
It was real up yours after every goal. So it had been brewing. And at the handshake, Conte didn't look Tuchel in the eye. It was a real storm past. And as he stormed past, Tuchel didn't let go of his hand, and Conte
didn't look at him.
Was spun around. He said, look me in the eye, mate, look me in the eye. So both red carded, both facing one match touchline bans. But great theatre in the Premier League overnight, the touchline there.
Absolutely magnificent. Will Zalatoris is in the clubhouse at 15 under. Sepp Straka, he's at 15 under and about 15 feet from the hole for birdie to win. The Aussies, the best of the Aussies. Cam Smith has finished in a tie for sixth. Adam Scott's a tie for sixth as well. Cam Davis a tie for 14th. Sorry, Fieldy, you still going?
No, just watch on the injuries as well. We could run through the scenarios all day. That Carlton-Collingwood game is so pivotal. It's going to take place to that Matthew Kennedy done for the season now. Scans confirming a Liz Frank injury after that fractured jaw. Adam Chera, no certainty. He was laid out with adductor soreness. And then Collingwood have got their own issues. Jack Ginnivan, highly unlikely with that hamstring tightness that saw him subbed. Taylor Adams, actually, interesting tweet from him, watching from home with his own groin injury on the couch, tweeted, imagine booing an injured player. Grubs. He loves a tweet, doesn't he, Tate? And then Jordan DeGoey laid out with a sore hip flexor. So unknown at this point whether he'll be right to face the Blues. Top four at stake. They play the long game. Slippery slope now. If you fall through the injury trapdoor now, you're done. So he's probably more unlikely than likely. So both teams have some injury issues.
Huge day for you today. Huge day. Messages continue to bounce around like nothing else about some big clubs. So good luck today, Field.
All to play out.
You'll be across it. Well, I know that.